This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. The television version of this show airs on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. The United States has for the first time dropped bombs on the impoverished Gulf Arab nation of Yemen. U.S. warships stationed off of the coast of Yemen were apparently repeatedly attacked over several days when the ship retaliated, saying it was targeting positions of the Houthi rebel groups on the ground. The U.S. actions compound those of its close ally Saudi Arabia, which has carried on a relentless war against its neighboring nation with active U.S. military support and purchased weapons. On Saturday, 140 Yemenis were killed and hundreds more injured when Saudi planes attacked a funeral. The U.S.-Saudi escalation of the war on Yemen comes on the heels of a startling revelation in an email exchange between Clinton campaign staffers leaked by WikiLeaks that admits Saudi financing of the Islamic State. ISIS is currently the U.S.'s lead target in a number of Muslim nations in the Middle East, North Africa, and Central Asia. Joining me to help sort it all out today is Christopher Davidson. He teaches politics at Durham University in England, and he's the author of several books on the Middle East. His latest is entitled Shadow Wars, The Secret Struggle for the Middle East. Welcome to the program, Christopher.
Thank you very much.
What does this U.S. Action signal to you in Yemen, particularly coming just a few days after Saudi Arabia had this horrific attack that many are calling a war crime? Is it just, as it's being cast, simple retaliation because these warships were apparently attacked? Or does this, you think, signal the U.S. physically and directly entering the war against Yemen?
Well, I think there's an important little bit of backstory to this, as well as Saudi Arabia's embarrassing and of course, very tragic bombing of the funeral last week. Saudi territory has also been targeted increasingly by missiles being fired from installations in Yemen. So here we have the situation where a key U.S. ally in the region, Saudi Arabia, is having its territorial integrity now threatened by the Houthi Saleh government in Yemen. So it's no longer just a question of the Houthis fighting back against the Saudi intervention, but now of actual Houthi incursions into Saudi Arabia itself. It seems in many ways this US intervention today, which is still, we shouldn't forget, very limited in nature, is sending a signal to the Houthis that the US is willing to prevent any further escalation, but yet at the same time, the United States is not going to put boots on the ground or not really going to do anything more to more substantially help its ally, Saudi Arabia. The bigger picture really is from the United States' interest. It doesn't really want to get any more involved in this conflict. The conflict, as we know, is sort of leveling and panning out into a rather long-running stalemate between Saudi's allies in Yemen and the Iran-backed Houthi movement.
So the Saudi war has received a tremendous amount of support from the United States, even before this bombing, military advisors, and of course the weapons that Saudi Arabia uses are purchased from the U.S. Saudi Arabia is the U.S.'s most loyal weapons buyer. But under the Obama administration, certainly there has been increasing tension between the two countries. There have also been calls from the U.S.'s own congressional ranks to call out Saudi Arabia with the demand to expose redacted parts of the 9/11 Commission report and the recent Senate-backed law that was first vetoed by Obama and then overridden by the U.S. Senate that would allow Americans to sue Saudi Arabia. In the context of these tensions between these two long-standing allies, how is the Yemen war playing out? What sort of internal wrangling do you think might be happening?
Well, almost certainly when Saudi Arabia began the intervention in Yemen, it assumed it would rather solidly have US backing. As you mentioned, the US has deployed some limited logistical assistance so far, and today it's upped the ante a little bit with these missile strikes. But by and large, Saudi Arabia has been left to flail on its own in Yemen. Now, that would be inconceivable just a few years ago when Saudi Arabia was, of course, still the swing oil producer and was the central to US interests in the region. Not necessarily because the United States was importing Saudi oil anymore, but that Saudi Arabia represented the kingpin in the OPEC cartel and was therefore central to the international energy industry. Since 2014, we've seen that being shaken up quite significantly. We've had the US shale oil revolution, new oil technologies coming on stream all around the world. We've had new oil coming in from Iran, which has recently been opening up its economy. We've seen Chinese demand for oil slowing down, which has really led to a scenario where Saudi Arabia's usefulness is no longer there for the United States in the same way it was up until very recently. Arguably, it's actually the US shale oil producers that are now the so-called swing producers rather than Saudi Arabia. And we're starting to see this play out now in the US-Saudi relationship, not only in Yemen, where Saudi Arabia is left to fend for itself, but inside the United States too, where the US government is no longer able to provide Saudi Arabia with the same kind of diplomatic coverage it's enjoyed for the past few decades. We've seen rather awkward, inconvenient truths about 9/11 resurfacing after 15 years. We've seen Saudi Arabia's very secretive holdings of US Treasury bonds being revealed to the public, and various other measures which would be really unthinkable prior to 2014. From Saudi Arabia's perspective, though, it doesn't really have anywhere to turn. Its major protector is still going to be the United States, especially with this proxy war, this Cold War with Iran seemingly getting worse and worse. But from America's position, this is a fairly comfortable scenario, with Saudi Arabia still needing it, and with Saudi Arabia still willing to spend significant chunks of its GDP on US, British, French armaments in order to continue prosecuting its Yemen intervention.
Speaking of Yemen, which I think sadly gets lost in these discussions, how are ordinary Yemenis caught in the crossfire dealing with this? We've heard for months now reports of starvation, particularly impacting the most vulnerable, which are children. There have been attempts to get aid convoys in that have been very hard hit as well. How are, you know, what's the breaking point? Is the Yemeni population able to stand much more of this?
Well, of course, there's been enormous suffering and tragedy in Yemen over the past year and a half, not too far off the scale we've been witnessing in Syria. But of course, the key difference is the perpetrator of the violence from the airs above Yemen is, of course, a key ally of the Western powers, whereas in Syria, it's largely been the other way around, which has led to really considerable mainstream media coverage in the West, which has tried to focus attention squarely on Russian and Syrian government airstrikes in Syria and to largely divert attention away from the Saudi-led airstrikes over Yemen. As to a breaking point, we may well have seen it last week with the horrific bombing of the funeral. Over the past year, we've had several other very serious civilian bombings too, hospitals, factories, even schools in Yemen. But the funeral really seems to have catalyzed something in Yemen. We've had calls for militias in Yemen to actually cross the border into Saudi Arabia more forcefully than before. And one can't help but think that within Saudi Arabia itself, many Saudis who quite clearly have strong misgivings over this intervention and war in Yemen are starting to think twice now about their leadership and what it's really up to there.
Right. I mean, isn't this the first time that Saudi forces have actually carried out, ground war? Saudi Arabia is actually paying a price in its own lives, which is not very popular with its population.
Yes, this is extremely significant. It's not just Saudi Arabia, it's also the United Arab Emirates. The UAE, for example, appears to have lost over 150 soldiers now since the intervention began. And this is really quite considerable given that the UAE is such a small country. These countries, of course, their militaries have been heavily Western armed and Western trained over the years. But the key problem really is that they're militaries of oil-rich states where the population, the citizens, have largely been accustomed to a welfare state and a government that distributes wealth to them in exchange for political acquiescence, a political deal, as it were, not to disrupt the status quo of the ruling families at the top. But never before have the citizens of these states been actually asked to fight. And what's really troubling, of course, for citizens of these states is they're not just fighting in Yemen, but they're actually dying too. They don't have the experience, the sort of battlefield experience that the Yemenis have. So this is more than cancelling out the superior firepower that the Saudi and UAE troops clearly possess.
Let's turn to the way in which Saudi Arabia remains in the spotlight in the United States. I mentioned at the top of our conversation around the WikiLeaks revelations. Here is a quote from an email by John Podesta, Clinton campaign head, saying, essentially admitting, quote, the governments of Qatar and Saudi Arabia, which are providing clandestine financial and logistical support to ISIL and other radical Sunni groups in the region. That email is, and I sort of read a fragment of a sentence there, essentially in relation to talking about putting pressure on these governments. That admission that Saudi Arabia has been providing clandestine support to the Islamic State, the most widely condemned death cult of an organization that the U.S. is targeting in northern Iraq, in Syria, and even now in Afghanistan. What does that say about U.S. politics? This should be a hugely embarrassing thing to be revealed within the ranks of U.S. government officials and someone running for president.
Well, there are three things to say here. Firstly, it's actually more serious than it sounds. If we read the email carefully, we see it's actually Clinton writing that to Podesta rather than the other way around.
Ah.
The second thing to note is this is not the first time Clinton has been discussing these matters. Back in 2009, we have a leaked US Department classified cable in which Clinton again refers to Saudi Arabia, Qatar, etc., as funding Al-Qaeda and serving as a key logistical and financial hub. And of course, back in 2009, US intelligence was conflating Al-Qaeda with the organization known as Islamic State in Iraq, which of course we now know as ISIS, or simply the Islamic State, basically the same organization. So Clinton's knowledge based on classified material for many years has been that these sorts of states have turned a blind eye at the very least, or have actually been assisting the financiers and the weaponizers of groups like Islamic State. The third thing to mention really is that this shouldn't come as any surprise. For the past 30 years or more, the United States has used regional proxies like Saudi Arabia to fund jihadist forces that can actually threaten and destabilize their enemies. Our classic example is, of course, Operation Cyclone in the 1980s, the biggest CIA covert operation in history, where the CIA matched Saudis dollar for dollar to fund the jihadists in Afghanistan against the People's Democratic Party, ultimately backed by the Soviet Union, to try and give the Soviet Union its own taste of the Vietnam, in their words. We saw forces again join in the 1990s with the jihadists brought to the Balkans to fight the Serbian government. So really it should come as no surprise today that the forces of Assad and the Baghdad government, which was, we shouldn't forget, increasingly aligning itself with Iran, have come under immense pressure since 2011 from various Al-Qaeda factions and now the Islamic State. These are essentially the hardline Sunni frontline extremists backed by the West's conservative Sunni monarchy allies in the Persian Gulf.
So what finally do you feel the outcome of all of this is going to be? I hate to ask you to make a prediction, but if we examine the worsening of relations between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia, along with these revelations about Saudi's role, it puts the U.S. in a pretty tough position. Of course, we know, for example, in the debates, the presidential debates, the issue of Saudi Arabia and the war on Yemen and the funding of ISIS doesn't even come up, even though it obviously should. But still, I would imagine that unless we have some very significant change in policy here in the U.S., that the U.S. may possibly relinquish its ties with Saudi Arabia, or is that too much?
Well, I think from the U.S. perspective, whoever is president really will probably take the position that neither Saudi Arabia nor Iran should reign supreme over the Middle East. Much better that they're sort of locked in this long-running, costly stalemate with each other. In many ways, since the Iran deal of last year, the United States is now in a much stronger position than we assume, in that it can trade freely with the two most powerful Middle Eastern states in the region. These two powerful states can neither quite get the upper hand over the other. So I don't really think we'll see Saudi Arabia being completely branded as a pariah state, a new sort of axis of evil entity, even if it did do 9/11 and evidence continues to mount to point to a Saudi cell's involvement in it. Instead, I think we're going to see a message coming from the United States that it only gives limited support to Saudi Arabia, but perhaps just enough to keep Saudi Arabia in the game, as it were, in this widening proxy war with Iran.
Well, Christopher, I want to thank you so much for your analysis on these very complex issues. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Christopher Davidson teaches politics at Durham University in England, and he's the author of several books on the Middle East. His latest book is called Shadow Wars, The Secret Struggle for the Middle East. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can find our interviews online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.